Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. Heads up, that name will change a wee bit sometime in the next month or so. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. As with my conversation last week, my first few episodes of the year are carefully chosen. Today, UTIs, urinary tract infections. I know so many women who have had one or more. But until talking with Paula, I had no idea of the complexity, the severity, the misinformation that is this subject. Paula blows a few myths out of the water, gives us so much information that we can't help but have hope, and there is so much specificity that you'll be able to do your own research if you need to. Paula is contributor to at least one Facebook group, and her suggested one is linked in the show notes. Lean into this conversation, and then share it with the women you know. Urinary tract infections, UTIs. After a career in residential elder care, I am well aware of UTIs and how they might manifest. When I was caregiving my mother on her dementia journey, her dementia took a sharp left, and the first thing I did was have her tested for a UTI. However, the urinary tract sits along that which we call our private parts, and yes, I just use air quotes, so people often delay seeking help. My guest today is part of the UTI Health Alliance, which seeks to create awareness, education, and community about urinary tract infections. UTIs affect women more than men. I knew that. What I didn't know is that over 50% of women will experience this painful infection in their life, and more than 30% of those will go on to experience life-dimming, recurrent infections that could go on for years or indefinitely. That means there's a good chance you've already experienced a UTI and would be happy to avoid another. If you're one of the lucky ones who hasn't had a UTI, get educated now so you can recognize it early and get treatment. Paula is here today to help you with information. Paula Cobb, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate the offer to be here and share what I have learned over my many years of experiencing this horrible disease and misdiagnosed disease, I want to say as well.
Okay, we'll get into that shortly then. Yeah, that would explain a lot. Yeah, it was interesting when I think it was Laura's profile came up on my radar. It was like one of those, why didn't I think of that? Because it is so common. So I really appreciate having you here. And I do have a whole list of questions for you. So let's jump right in. We know a UTI is an infection of the urinary tract. Can you explain more about what that means?
So basically, you have a pathogen, which is a bacteria. They have common bacteria. Usually, the literature says Enterococcus or E. coli are the main two culprits, and they say that they come from our bowels, since our rectum and our urethra are in such close proximity. It gives the bacteria to come from the bowel and enter into the urethra and then cause the infection. However, there are many more pathogens that can cause a urinary tract infection than just those two. And I could list many of them, but I would probably butcher some of the names. But usually when you think of a urinary tract infection, they say the bladder, but it could also get up into the kidneys and the ureters as well. So it can involve the whole urinary tract system.
Okay. Now I read somewhere too that after sex, you should have a good wash, because that can also introduce, because I guess, once again, as you say, everything's in such close proximity in a woman.
Yes, that is one of the well-known causes of urinary tract infections. And it may be, possibly it could be the spouse is infected and they're unknowing that they have an infection, and men sometimes are asymptomatic. And so it's always advised, if you're getting recurrent urinary tract infections after sexual intimacy, to have your partner tested. That's always a good idea.
Okay. That's interesting, because you think of like E. coli and from the rectum, that being that close, that all makes sense. But Yeah, jeepers, we're 3 minutes in and it's already sounding like a really complex whole, you know, bunch of things, of factors that come into this. I was going to ask what causes. You've given us some of that. Once the bacteria is in, what happens then to create such a dreadful infection?
So a lot of women, they have a urinary tract infection. They're given a few days of antibiotics and it goes away and then they're fine. Unfortunately, there is a large percentage of women who are given a few days of antibiotics. It kind of phases the bacteria, but it doesn't totally kill it. And then the bacteria reside, they kind of can burrow into the bladder wall and live there and then come out again when the environment is nice and welcoming to them and cause a new infection. Or they can also create what's called biofilms and live on the bladder wall and break down the bladder wall, causing irritation and inflammation. And then they could come out also when the environment is welcoming. The thing with biofilms is you can have multiple pathogenic bacteria in one biofilm. So you could have E. coli, Enterococcus, and Klebsiella all come out at the same time. And that's when we talk about my population of women, and we are referred to as chronic or embedded urinary tract infections. And this is all thought to have been started several years ago when the antibiotic prescription went down from 2 weeks to like 5 days. And it just wasn't enough to kill the bacteria. It just kind of phased them. They came back to life, started to live in your urinary bladder biome, and then created another whole issue. So usually when people say, I have recurrent urinary tract infections, it's the same bacteria coming back and back and back because we're not given enough antibiotics to kill it permanently. And it's a huge problem. And it's created almost an epidemic among women.
That's interesting that you say that they actually cut the duration of the antibiotic, because the first thing that came to mind was, especially in this case, you make sure that you take your prescription right to the end, because so many people with, you know, if it's the flu or something, oh, I'm feeling better, I'm not going to take the rest of my pills. But in this case, you better.
Well, not only should you better, but you should also ask for at least 14 days. We really need to have 14 days, just like any other bacterial infection, an upper respiratory infection, a sinus infection. We need to have a complete course. Because if we don't kill it initially, then you've really created a monster, and that's where you have the chronic embedded, and it's years of antibiotics and the consequences that come with long-term antibiotic usage.
How might a woman suspect she has a UTI?
So the typical acute UTI, which is basically we call acute new, of course you'd have urgency, frequency, pain with urination, lower abdominal pain. Those are all the typical signs of an acute UTI. A person with a chronic or embedded UTI, it's a little bit different. Some have pain with urination, some don't. But mostly all of us have some sort of pressure or pain in our bladder area. Some, like I said, can have kidney problems. And then that would be the flank pain. But basically, if it's acute, you take antibiotics, it goes away, and it doesn't come back. That's not what we're worrying about. We're worrying about the infection that just won't go away. And the reason, you know, a lot of women will go to the doctor and they'll say, I'm peeing a lot. I'm having to get up at night to pee a lot. It hurts when I pee. My bladder hurts. I always feel like I have to go to the bathroom. It's not going away. And they'll go to the lab and they'll spin it in their lab and they'll say, oh, there's nothing there. We don't see any bacteria. Well, that's part of the problem. They're using a diagnostic criteria that was 50, 60 years old, that was established for pregnant women with kidney disease. and it's not catching the bacteria. So there are facilities now that you can send your urine in, and they'll do PCR testing or NGS testing, and they'll actually find the DNA of the bacteria, and then you can treat it. But with the gold standard of the dipstick in the urine and just the regular old lab test, they don't find it. And so many women suffer, and they're also misdiagnosed with a term that we hate. I don't know if you've heard of it. Interstitial cystitis. That's a common trash can term that women are diagnosed with when they can't find infection in their little laboratory. But it's not a real disease. And that's the word that we need to get out. It's a symptom. Does the lining of our bladder inflame? Absolutely. That's what cystitis is. But it's because we have this undiagnosed infection. So interstitial cystitis is a symptom. Chronic embedded urinary tract infection is the disease or the cause.
And is there always pain involved?
Yeah, usually most women have some sort of pain. Some may be pressure, you know. Sometimes I'll say my bladder feels like it has a lot of pressure. But there is some sort of discomfort that is constant, never goes away, and it's life-altering. So if you can imagine going to a urologist and saying, I feel like I have an infection, and them time after time saying, no, you don't, no, you don't, no, you don't. Then they finally say, oh, you have interstitial cystitis and there's nothing we can do. Or they'll do some very old techniques like a hydrodistention, which tries to stretch your bladder, which is temporary and causes scarring of the bladder, which will eventually make your bladder capacity less. There's also a medication called Elimeron, which they give these women, and it causes macular degeneration. And they're still diagnosing these medications. And it's like, this is why we want to get the word out. Women are being harmed by the lack of progress in the urology field for women. It's pretty vast.
I have health experts on in different facets of a woman's life. And a common thread is just this whole, you know, it's a woman's issue, so nobody's ever really bothered to dive any deeper into it and figure out more, as well as trying to, you know, eliminate it if possible.
I think it's because we're so multifaceted. We have more hormone issues. Our bodies kind of take a beating when we go through childbirth. And we're just more difficult as a gender than a male. You know, a male's issues are, I think, a little more straightforward. Without getting graphic, I think you understand what I mean. You know, their issues are either sexual dysfunction or prostate issues. And that's basically it. And urologists are surgeons by trade. That's really what they are. So they want the easy fix. So you will find with a chronic embedded urinary tract infection, urologists are not very helpful. They just don't know. So you have to find what we call UCTI specialist. So we have a couple in the States. There's one in the UK that I know, two in the UK that I have heard of. And then Australia also, I believe, is another country that is pretty big into trying to get the word out about CUTI diagnoses. But yeah, it's scary, and women have to be their own best advocates right now because doctors just aren't, which is sad.
But not unusual. I think we're getting used to it. Yeah. So if you can find like a really good lab, is a urine sample the only way to diagnose?
That's going to be your best bet. Mm-hmm. Now, there's blood work also involved with getting diagnosed with CUTI. There are three issues that they can find in blood work. that have to do with fibrin. So it's Leiden factor 5 and PAI1. Those are two diseases that people have, or genetic anomalies, that the person makes too much fibrin. And then lipoprotein A elevation is the third. And you're going to hear about this one soon, because they have a medication in the several medications actually in the final stages of development. And as soon as it gets approved, you'll hear about lipoprotein A. But that one, you can't break down fibrin. So not only are those three blood issues a cardiovascular risk, biofilms are made of fibrin. So we can't break down the biofilms. So that's what leads to the chronic infections in 70%, I believe Ruth Chris research has shown, about 70% of her patients. And Ruth Chris is kind of the grandmother of the CUTI research. But about 70% of the patients have one of those three blood issues that have to deal with fibrin. I myself have the lipoprotein A. Mine is severely elevated. So then I can't break biofilms down, and then I got chronic infection.
I got a bunch more questions, but you're already blowing me away. Like, do you have a medical background, or are you one of those women that had an issue and said, I got to find out everything I can find out. I got to learn everything I can learn about this issue.
So a little bit of both. I'm a physical therapist.
Okay.
And I was actually diagnosed in physical therapy school with IC, interstitial cystitis, and it didn't make any sense to me. How at 27, my bladder just inflames for an idiopathic reason. Nobody knows why. And all of the doctors would do was say, here, take this little red pill and try to do the best you can with life. At 27, I felt like my life was over and it made no sense. So it took me about 3 years to find a physician up in South Dakota. His name was Paul Fuzigato. And he was just kind of one of the earliest ones. He cultured the urine samples in broth a little bit differently than just spinning it in a lab. And he found one bacteria. So he was kind of focused on Enterococcus. And so I took antibiotics for about 18 months. And I was in remission for several years. And then I did some dumb things. I worked in a pool, being an aquatic therapist, in a hot tub. And then menopause hit. And all of those three things kind of got me back to where I was infected again. But I had never treated the lipoprotein A. I knew it was elevated, very elevated. But I wasn't serious about it because I was still young and dumb. And I thought, oh, the antibiotics took it away. And we'll just go on with life. But now, since I've been dealing with this for about 3.5 years, I'm definitely more well-versed in causative factors and how to give hope to women in how to deal with things as they come along, what to look for, how to attack it, and not just tell women, okay, well, you're stuck with this for the rest of your life, because I don't believe that.
You know, you use the term young and dumb, but I think still, despite all the knowledge we do have, you tend to trust a doctor, you tend to trust a specialist that they do know more than you. And as long as somebody knows more than you, you go with it. So it's only, like, as you said, it's only when you sort of said, okay, like, this is not good, this is not right, this is just, everything's wrong about it. And then you started getting your own education, obviously.
I'm kind of one of those people, things have to make sense to me.
Okay.
And if it doesn't make sense to me, I'm not gonna believe it. I'm not gonna give in until it's gotta make sense. And it just didn't make sense at 27. I'm fine. And then one day I feel like I have a urinary tract infection, and then a few months later I'm told I have a disease that I'll never get rid of that will destroy my life. I had no kids at that point. So of course all of those things fall into place. And there are many young women in that same spot. How do I have a family when I have this horrid pain and feeling that I have to go to the bathroom all the time. You know, who wants to be intimate when that part of your body is raging? It's definitely a balance, but I just want women to know there are hope. There is hope, and we just have to get them to the right places and doing the right things.
Okay, a little while ago you mentioned DNA. Mm. Is there... explain that to me. Like, where is the DNA, and what? I'm not even going to make sense when I ask the question because it's over my head.
I don't even know if I can explain it correctly. There are three labs which I have used, and I don't know if it's politically correct to name them, but one has their own technique. It's called next generation sequencing, and where they can look for the little bits and fragments of the DNA of the bacteria to know they are either are there now or they're not, or they were there and they're dead. Now that particular company is probably the most sensitive, and it will actually pick up dead bacteria. The company that I prefer best does what's called PCR testing, and I'm sorry, I don't have the terms for those three letters, but they look for, I wonder if it's like polymerase chain, I'm not sure, I don't want to misspeak, but their technique is called PCR testing, and they will look for bits of bacteria, and then they will take that culture and grow it. So they will take your pooled sample. So you may have a person with chronic embedded urinary tract infection. One of the major signs is they'll have at least 2 to 3 pathogens come out at the same time. People like me, I would have 7 to 10 different bacteria pop out at the same time. Same time. Now imagine what inflammatory response is going on with that. But they will find every single one. And they'll take your pooled urine sample and grow it in a broth and find the antibiotic that will kill your bug. They don't guess. The first company that I mentioned, they just use research on this antibiotic should kill this bug. The company that I use will take your sample, test it against antibiotics, and see what dies and see what doesn't. And then they will give you what's called a susceptibility report, and then tell you what antibiotics you can choose from. Usually there's a few that you can choose from.
Okay, so that does clarify it insofar as it's the bacteria's DNA, not your DNA, that makes you more chronic too.
No, they're looking for the bacterial DNA.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, now, if you show that you've got, let's say 7, just pull a number out of the air, 7 different bacteria, mm-hmm. I will assume that all the bacteria are beating you up, but are they fighting amongst each other too, which makes the whole situation even worse?
So usually when, like I said, a biofilm will have different pathogens within itself, and they will invite other bacteria around, and they will layer on top of each other. Think of it, I don't know, I kind of envision it kind of like a house, you know, different layers, or a cake. And you have to go through one layer at a time, but they actually form communities within each other. Those biofilms will then talk to each other and be advocates for each other. And so it makes it harder to bust them because they want to live. They're doing everything they can to survive, you know? So you have to break through the biofilm. So people like me with the LPA or the lead in factor 5 or the PAI1 gene. And I just heard the other day there was a lead in factor 2, but I'm not very versed on that one. We have to take what's called a biofilm buster. So I have to take 2 pills a day to make sure that I break the biofilm up, or at right now I've been clear for about 5 months, keep them from forming until I can get my LPA down. But the one that I use is a earthworm enzyme, is what it is. It's an earthworm enzyme.
Who figured that one out?
I do not know what, it's kind of Chinese medicine, but there are several different on the market. It will depend on the doctor that you get connected with, as to what their preferences is. And then to make it a little bit more difficult, when you have a Klebsiella or Pseudomonas come out, they have a little bit different shell in their biofilm. So you have to use a biofilm buster that has bismuth in it to break those up. So it's a very complicated and long treatment process. Like I said, you have to break through the layers and you have to go one at a time. And you never know when they're going to pop out. My last big pop out was in May. We were in O'Hare coming back from my daughter's softball tournament. And I was in tears, not thinking I could make the plane ride home because my urethra was so inflamed. I could not sit. And I was taking oxycodone to try to make it home, and it wasn't touching the pain. And when the test results came back, I had 4 very large bacteria that had released at the same time.
So. Every woman right now listening who does not have a UTI is going anything to not get one.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Now, you talked about having kids.
Yes.
If a 27-year-old woman is looking at hopefully having kids in her future, but she has chronic UTIs, what's the correlation there?
So for me, I had not found Dr. Fukuzawa yet, so I sucked it up and just made it through 9 months. It was not enjoyable. I did not enjoy my pregnancy.
So it was more painful, and you probably couldn't take the drugs.
I was not on any medication. Now, there are some women in the Facebook groups that I manage. There are women who are pregnant. And, of course, they are on safe antibiotics, pregnancy-safe antibiotics, okay, and medications to help them manage the symptoms and the infection while they're pregnant. So there are women who are pregnant going through active treatment. It just changes it a little bit because you have to be a little more careful. But there are options for pregnant women to treat this while they're wanting to have a family. Absolutely.
Okay, and I'm going to show off my ignorance here. Can you use any sort of like a local anesthetic when it's really bad if you can't take drugs during a pregnancy?
Some women will use instills, bladder instills. That's not the preferred method for most women because it can be painful and it's pretty expensive. So the cost usually makes that out of reach for most women. We will use castor oil packs when we're really painful. Castor oil is really good for calming nerves down and is safe. So how that works, we just order everything off Amazon. You can look it up, castor oil packs and castor oil. And so when I would have a flare, I would put it on my abdomen over my bladder, put a heat pad over it. Sometimes I would sleep with it. You can put it on for as long as you want, but that's pretty good for calming nerves. I have heard of women putting, dipping tampons in castor oil and then inserting them to kind of help calm things down. That is a common, so castor oil is a common thing that we use to help with our pain.
Do you know how many grandmothers and great-grandmothers are doing the happy dance in their coffins right now? I told you castor oil would fix everything.
Right. It seems funny, but yeah, it works. It's a common treatment. Now, some women say, it doesn't do anything, but it worked well for me. So what happens to after you get rid of the infection, like I'm still dealing with up and down symptoms, the nerves. I think the research is showing when you have a lot of infections, you actually get an overgrowth of nerves in your bladder. And then you have the pudendal nerve, which feeds your rectum, your clitoris, your urethra, your uterus, all that area down there, and it can get inflamed and irritated and cause pain as well. And so it takes a while for the nerves to heal. Will they heal? Yes. It's just, it takes time, and it can be triggered, like if you have a hard bowel movement, so you want to manage your constipation and stuff, that can trigger the pudendal nerve, and then you get bladder pain. So it is a little bit of a dance.
I'm just going to say, I think all those, the pictures you get in biology class of this is your system, they need to be way more complicated than they currently are. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Now, You said that infections can happen in different parts of the urinary tract. Can you explain that a bit more, please?
So the bacteria can obviously move anywhere it wants to. Wherever it feels like the environment is right for it to grow and multiply, it's going to go. I have a friend in Bermuda, and she lost a kidney because of it. And she just had that removed, and her symptoms are less bladder. They started kind of that way, but now she has more systemic symptoms. So she has dizziness, fatigue, headaches, things like that. That can happen as well. The chronic infection, embedded infection, can translate anywhere in your urinary tract and cause issues. Dr. Professor Malone Lee was one of the big proponents over in the UK. And he was in on this research, I think, in the 50s and was kind of made fun of. And unfortunately, he's passed. But, you know, a lot of women get so much pain, and for so long, they want to have their bladder removed because they want to have a quality of life back. And, you know, his saying, and he was very intelligent and still thought of today, but his saying was never have your bladder taken out because the infection will just move somewhere else in the urinary tract. So it's better to just fight it and beat it and then to take it out, and because you'll still have residual problems. I have talked to a couple of women who had their bladders removed and they seem to be doing fine. So there's always a difference between patient to patient. But overall, that's not recommended to have the bladder removed unless it's scarred beyond repair.
Okay, now I want our listeners to stay tuned in because I do get more positive along the way. Now, our audience is mid-age women. If I've done my research right, after menopause, a decline in circulating estrogen causes changes in the urinary tract, and those changes can increase the risk of UTIs. Is that correct?
That is 100% correct. Yes. So some women can do okay with like a Vagifem or an estradiol cream insert into the vagina and get the protection that they once had. You have to be careful with that because there are some fillers in the estradiol cream that will aggravate the bladder. It'll set it like alcohol. Some of them have alcohol in them. But I don't want to say, oh, you can't do that. There's a solution for that. You can go to a compounding pharmacy and they have different bases. And you just need to try the bases and see, okay, well, that base worked. I didn't get aggravated. And then they can insert the estradiol into that base for you. And then you can still have the benefits. I was one. I could not tolerate the estradiol vaginal cream. So I take oral estradiol. And as soon as I started to do that, my infections, they went down very quickly, pretty quickly.
Okay.
So estrogen is a very important part in the recovery from CUTI.
Okay. Now, another part of getting older is a greater possibility of other health issues, which might lead to, and this is a huge jump, I realize that, but catheterization. And that can increase the risk of UTIs too, correct?
Yes. So anytime you insert anything into the bladder, you can always introduce a pathogen that would then think, oh, this is a great place for me, and cause an infection. So that's always a risk. You know, usually, though, if you catch those quickly and then have a longer bout of antibiotic treatment, you should be fine. It's don't let them give you 5 days. Don't let them give you 7 days. Demand 14 days. That's my biggest thing is it's just 5 days, 7 days. It's not enough. And I think if you stay on top, if you have to have a catheter, whether it be suprapubic or the regular type, yeah, you have to stay on top of those risks because they can happen.
Whew. Okay. I mentioned my career in elder care. UTIs were certainly not uncommon. Is there a reason for the increase, or is there an increase? Maybe I was aware of it because I was working in that field, but is there a greater what's the word? Does it happen more often, a higher occurrence of UTIs in elderly?
So I worked in the nursing homes as well, being a physical therapist. I did have my time in the nursing homes. But yes, I would say they're pretty frequent in women. I don't know if it's lack of cleanliness, you know, lack of bowel and bladder, just cleanliness. It could be the lack of estrogen. Maybe they're not getting a supplementary estrogen at 90 or 80 years old at that point. They figure, oh, why bother? And then, of course, you always have to think about the immune system and other comorbidities. You know, maybe the immune system isn't where it needs to be. What other health issues they have that their immune system just can't keep up. But, of course, the main thing you want to watch there is the mental changes. You know, that's the first thing, like you said, they have disorientation, anger, whatever change that you see, that's the first thing you want to check. But funny enough, us younger women also have that. And we talk about that on our Facebook pages, but you know, I'm grumpy. I can't think. A foggy brain is a common complaint. I'm just not myself. I can't focus. So I think that is thought of as probably a more elderly women symptom with UTIs, but it also affects us younger women. It affects our brain as well. It really does.
Well, some of those things you mentioned are also just, they go hand in hand with menopause anyways. So it just gets murkier and murkier and murkier.
Well, I think though, if you know that you have a chronic urinary tract infection and someone that's young, and you start noticing mental issues, that you need to check. So yeah. That would be my best advice.
And I guess in the case of dementia, that person, there's a really good chance that person wouldn't know how to express whatever they're going through.
Right.
You know, it's just discomfort or pain or something. And then
They can't communicate what's going on. Yeah. So you know, the nursing staff should, you know, they should be well-versed in how to watch for that sort of things. But, you know, I tell my husband all the time, it's nothing to play around with. It can go septic and be deadly. I don't have the statistics on how that happens, but my mother-in-law just had a lodged kidney stone right outside her kidney and went septic because she couldn't drain the waste from her kidney. And I told him right then, I was like, this is what can happen if I don't stay on top of my urinary tract health.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned in my intro that the urinary tract proximity to all the sexual parts for a woman, they're so close. Can that lead to, or have you seen that it leads to a bit of embarrassment where, don't really want to talk about it? And I guess coming at it from a boomer aspect, the boomer's age is we were brought up, we don't talk about stuff like that. And I mean, I think we're all getting better. It's like, there's no holds barred, but there's still people out there who don't want to discuss it because, you know, whether they don't understand the difference, that it may be sexual, it may be urinary tract infection, whatever. So they delay getting help.
Well, I mean, I think honestly, you know, like you said, we need to talk about these things and we need to be comfortable with talking about these things. This is our health. This is our bodies we're talking about. And, you know, any woman that's given birth, you've kind of been all out there anyway. You know, I understand what you're talking about generationally, but I would advise women to ask the questions. The doctors should be educated enough. They're not going to think poorly of you because you've asked a personal question about a very intimate part of your body. And if it's a part of your health, and you as a person are the strongest advocate for your health, and you have to be. Especially as a female, we have to advocate for ourselves. I guess if you're a little bit shy about talking about it, I would say, just do it. Just do it. It's going to be okay. And if you don't understand what's going on and you don't get the right answers from that doctor, find a female doctor that might understand and work with you. A lot of us go through many, many, many doctors because we're not listened to and we're not understood. And we're we're told it's in our head, or it's we're not cleaning ourselves properly, or, you know, it's basically we're blamed, and it's just not the case. It's just not the case.
Well, I think too, it's really easy, you know, like you look at the broad picture, the very basic picture of a UTI, and you think, okay, I've got an infection in my urinary tract. I'll just deal with it. But boy, having listened to you now for half an hour, it's like, holy crap, this could be really complicated. There are all these other issues that I never even thought existed. And, you know, so all the more reason to get things checked out.
Yeah, if you're having chronic urinary tract infection, there's a reason why. Find out what it is. It's not normal. There are many women who never have a UTI, okay? Why do they not have UTIs versus people like me who have them one after the other for 3 years? Why? And that's kind of where I was like, what's the cause of this? And so that's where my blood work came in. And that's why blood work is important. So if you're a woman and you've had several UTIs, you need to find out why. And it just may be as simple as blood work. You know, look for those three genetic things. Lyme disease is another one, because Lyme releases its toxins through the bladder. That can cause issues. Epstein-Barr virus, Bartonella, those are all things that they can test for in blood work that can have a negative impact on your bladder. And when your bladder is not feeling good, your quality of life goes way down. And that's what we want to change.
Now, you've mentioned kidneys, you've mentioned sepsis. If a UTI is left untreated, if a woman can bear it, is that sort of where it ends up?
It most certainly can. There are good chances. If it doesn't resolve itself, you know, and doctors want to say, if you drink enough water and you drink cranberry juice, blah, blah, blah. Now, don't boo to that. Don't do that. You're asking for a very serious repercussion. Kidney damage, sepsis, those are probably, and death from sepsis are very real possibilities from uncontrolled urinary tract infections.
Okay, now I think you just basically told me that I can erase this question about cranberry juice.
Yes.
Okay.
So grant anything acidic in a person with a chronic embedded urinary tract infection will not be tolerated usually, because the lining of the bladder is damaged from the biofilms being attached to the wall. It breaks down what we call the gag layer. And if you look into that, that's a pretty common term. And so then acidic foods, spicy foods, things like that, can in some women, not all women, cause inflammation and then more pain in the bladder. So you have to be careful until you're healed with your food choices. And so basically what a lot of women do is they go to a bland diet. And then as they heal, they'll try something. Like I tried a bowl of chili a few weeks ago, and you have to wait 3 days. So it takes 3 days to know if you're going to have a response, which is amazing. So you have to try one thing at a time. So I had a bowl of chili for the first time in 3 years, and it was wonderful, and I didn't have a response. So, but then I had a bottle of Sprite, and it didn't go well. So I know that I'm not ready for that yet.
Okay. Now, before I clicked record, we were talking and I said, I got to go write that down. If you don't mind, if this isn't too personal, you talked about having procedures.
So at the age of 5, apparently I don't have much of a memory of that. Apparently I was having infections before then. And so they fixed it by doing what my mom said was a stretching. And I've asked her, she's still alive, and I've asked her, what exactly did they do? Well, my mom and dad don't pay attention. They just, whatever, you know? And it just sounds like a hydrodistension, which is one of the older methods to treat the interstitial cystitis, because when your bladder is inflamed, of course, it's smaller, right? So your bladder's inflamed probably because you have undiagnosed bacterial infection in it. Your immune system's going to cause an inflammatory response. And so they try to stretch the bladder to give more volume, which decreases your frequency and urgency. But it's only temporary, and it can cause scar tissue, which will then make a permanent negative impact on your bladder because it'll make it smaller. So that's one of the things that they want to do, and they still want to do that. And they want to do a lot of cystoscopies, and that's fine. You can have a few cystoscopies, and probably what they'll find is that your bladder wall looks healthy and normal, and you have a low capacity. Well, yeah, because there's nothing wrong with my bladder lining or my wall. It's going to look good, but I'm inflamed underneath, so I don't have the capacity that I have. So cystoscopies are not a real useful diagnostic tool. They used to put you under anesthesia, and I had this done back in the 90s. They'd put you under anesthesia, and they'd blow your bladder up with water and look for red lines, blood vessels in your bladder. And if you found that, then they'd say, oh, you had IC. Well, now they know that a lot of women have that, and they don't have any bladder history or issues. So they've kind of done away with that. And then they'll give Elimeron, which is a medication for interstitial cystitis, and that can cause macular degeneration, so essentially cause you to go blind. And when I was going through this last bout, my mother was like, you need to go to the Mayo's Clinic. And I was like, so I Googled Mayo's Clinic, and I looked up interstitial cystitis, which is a dirty word, by the way. We don't like to say that word. But their treatment was Elimeron. This is Mayo's. This is Mayo's. They were still diagnosing a medication that can cause you to go blind. And this is how they treat women.
Okay, that's a really good segue now into going into something a little more positive. Okay. How can we reduce our risk of a UTI?
Well, obviously, you know, you want to make sure that if you're having UTIs after intimacy, make sure you want to take a prophylactic antibiotic. That works for some women, but you also probably need to have your partner tested. That's probably the bottom line. You need to know if he has a bacteria that he's asymptomatic that he can give to you. For people like me, I will never get into a tub, an ocean, a pool. I will never immerse that part of my body again because I don't want to introduce any sort of bacteria into my urethra at all. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, I clean myself after every bowel movement. And we all do. A lot of us do. But honestly, for some women, if you have one of those issues, it's going to hit you. At some time, it's probably going to hit you. And it may not hit you in the bladder. If you have a fibrin issue, I know women who have had miscarriages because they have one of the issues, and that's where it hit them. So until you get that part of your fibrin generation back in check, it's just, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't want to say if you have LPA, PAI1 or leading factor 5, it's only going to affect your bladder. It can affect other parts of your body as well and systems.
So dietarily, though, there's nothing we can do. Like you sort of said, you know, drinking lots of water, cranberry juice, like none of that works. No. So cleanliness seems to be, like, even if you carry it to the extreme, or what would seem to be the extreme to, you know, anybody else, that's what needs to be done.
Yeah, I think that your best bet, it's got to go beyond just wiping front to back. You know, you probably need to, if you've had chronic or recurrent infections, you need to be aware that you probably need to clean yourself after every bowel movement. You need to make sure you're not in wet underwear. You know, maybe you've sweat or something like that. You know, always try to make yourself dry. Keep yourself dry because you don't want to give any sort of advantage to that bacteria to grow, any environment whatsoever. And I think those are small things to do, but I just want women to know it's not their fault. They can do all those things and still get chronic bladder infections because something is wrong within them that needs to be addressed. And that's the missing piece that we have to get out, and we have to get providers involved. That's huge. And we have to get the women to advocate for themselves and not buy into, oh, you have IC, good luck, which is basically what's happening. And It's destroying a lot of lives. We've had women. Suicide is not uncommon in our population. I believe we had 4 on just one page last year commit suicide. Young healthy women with just this issue. So it's important that we get the word out and women know it's not their fault. It's the it's the medicine that has let us down. And we have to know more and we have to advocate for ourselves.
So similar to menopause, where my generation needs to talk to my daughters as to what to expect. This is another thing that just maybe should be mentioned, just as they get older too, like who knows what can happen, and just to make sure everybody's educated. I mean, tell your friends, tell your kids, your daughters, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Estrogen is huge with this. And I think it's going to become huge with just everything in women. I think for so many years, they scared us with, oh, if you take estrogen postmenopausal, you're going to get breast cancer. And I don't think that's the case anymore, especially if you just use it vaginally. When I started taking it, like I said, it was the turning point for me. I noticed the infections really started to go down. Things started to feel more normal in certain body parts. And I just felt more like myself. Now, I gained 20 pounds back, but, you know.
Who cares at this stage?
But I want women to know, you want a more hopeful side of this? There is hope. There is hope. You know, I'm sitting here talking to you after 30 years? Has it been 30 years since 1994? And I'm still here and I've had 2 kids and they're both great and they're adult kids, but I know what I'm fighting now. And I want other women to understand what they're fighting, and I need them to do their research. I don't want to name knock doctors, but I need them to do their research for CUTI specialists. They're here in America. They're here. They're in the UK. They're in Australia. And find one of them, get on boards, get on the Facebook pages and ask your questions, talk to other women. You're going to see it's a long, hard road, but you can get through it and get your life back. That's the hope that we all have to have.
There you go.
Because it's there.
Yeah. Tell us about the UTI Health Alliance.
So I'm just new with hooking up with Lauren. I met up with her last fall, and I did. She got me connected to do a podcast with a doctor in the UK and a doctor in New York, and we did a live broadcast for CME Outfitters, and that went well. We had over 600 physicians and other professionals sign up, register for it, which they said was one of their biggest. And so she is revamping her company in January, and she's going to change the name, and she's really wanting to grow, to get the word out there, do a lot of these podcasts, and just get the word out there, because she's a patient as well as I am. And, you know, the bottom line is we don't want young women who have yet to be diagnosed or just diagnosed to have to suffer like we did. We want to help them get the resources that they need so that their journey is a lot shorter.
Right. So if she's changing the name of the website, like I would normally hear, ask you, where do we find you on the World Wide Web? Mm-hmm. But is that going to be changing then in the new year?
Yeah, I think the last I heard it was going to be Let's Talk UTI was going to be the name of her new website. But I don't believe any of that is completed yet.
What sort of Facebook groups would you recommend then?
So the one, let me look here. I want to get this right. The one that I moderate that has the largest population, it's called Long-Term Antibiotic Support for Chronic Embedded UTI.
Okay. I was going to write that down, but I'll write it down when I edit.
Yeah. And it has, let me see, 1,800 members, and it's active. We have posts every day. We have women from all different parts of the world, and we try very hard to keep out the scammers. Yeah. So we wanted to make a good question and answer site so that women can get the answers they need. Everybody has a different experience with this. We have people with vaginal issues and bladder issues. We have people with just bladder issues. And then we have the pregnant women who need support. We actually have a male, at least one male as a member, which is interesting.
Just out of curiosity, does that man have a UTI or is he supporting a partner with UTI?
No, he's actually diagnosed with UTIs. Yep, and on long-term antibiotics. So when I say long-term antibiotics, and this is the part people need to understand, it's years. You know, it could be my first time I went through this, it was 18 months. I'm currently 3.5 years into treatment, but I've been off antibiotics now for a couple of months. So it's not a quick fix, but it does work. There are doctors out there that know what they're doing. For the most part, it is still a little trial and error, but there's hope. I don't want women to just get the diagnosis of you have IC, good luck. That's just not right. And we need to stop that dialogue. We need to stop that diagnosis, and we need to stop using that term.
Okay, so I will put the Facebook group link in the show notes, and then this goes live, actually, we're in early January. So I will just keep track of you or Laura. And as soon as there's a new website, I'll post that in the show notes. Because I don't know about you, but when I listen to podcasts, I might be going back a few months. Who knows? So not a problem there. Before we close, can I ask you a personal question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you the Paula Cobb of volleyball fame?
I did play volleyball, yes. how did you pick that up?
No. I just love to end on a personal note. And there's only two people I've ever struggled with, and you were one of them. And yeah. I think I mentioned that I saw your face on profile, and when I looked you up, on my search engine, this picture, and I went, because your picture's gone off of PodMatch. It's like, oh, I think that's her.
I played volleyball at the University of North Carolina back in the 90s. So, yes. And then I coached after I got older. So, yes. Yes.
Okay. So, you were a college pro, were you?
I'm sorry?
You were a college pro?
I just college. They don't consider that pro, just college athlete.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're better than the masses if you're playing at college level. That's great.
Back when I could jump. Not no more.
Oh, dear. I can identify with that. That's okay. Yeah. Okay. As I mentioned, Facebook link is in the show notes. And if there's any more links coming, they'll be on your page at our website. Listeners, what's your experience with urinary tract infections? Talk to us. You know what I didn't ask you that I always ask before I close? Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want mid-age women to think about?
No, I think estrogen, you know, really investigate the estrogen. Do your research, get on Google and type in chronic embedded urinary tract infections. If you're having this issue, get on that website, ask the questions. There are so many women that are willing to help, and don't take any one doctor's advice as the only word, because many of us, most of us, all of us have been through many doctors. And don't stop until you find the answer that's going to work for you, because this is not a forever disease. It can be treated. Will it ever go away permanently? We tend not to use the word cure. We use the word remission. But you can have a long, long remission and a high quality of life again. You just have to find the right resources, and they're out there. I would encourage women of our age to do the get on the computer, Google it, and find other women. They're going to be your best resource.
Dig. Okay, that's a nice positive way to wrap this up. Yeah. I'll start again with my exit. Listeners, what's your experience with urinary tract infections? Please talk to us. We need to raise the awareness around them and normalize talking about them. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Oh, I just realized how badly I worded this. I said, what burning question did I not ask Paula? Oh, no. Okay, maybe that is the right way to phrase this. What burning question did I not ask Paula? Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. I just finished saying that we need to raise awareness around UTIs and normalize talking about them. There's a good chance that maybe a friend, somebody you know, has suffered in silence or near silence. She needs to know she's not alone and that there are people out there who can help. Leave stars and reviews where you can. The algorithm goddesses love that. You can support this podcast by buying me a coffee. That's a pretty cheap option. The link is in the show notes and above Paula's head on her page at our website. I'm registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll be notified whenever a new episode comes out. Paula Cobb, thank you for being my guest today and sharing like a whole truckload of information. I did not realize for even a second how big and how complex this could be. Yeah, it's just such an important, and in my notes I put a rampant health issue. So thank you so much for coming on today.
You're welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to spread the word. And anytime I can take advantage of helping other women, I want to do that. So thank you.
No, thank you. Have a great rest of week.
You bet. Have a happy I'm going to have a happy Thanksgiving.
There you go. By the time this airs, we'll both have had a happy Christmas.
Yes, probably.
There we go. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.